Hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning. First of all, let me start by saying my name is Maureen O'Connor. I'm the Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court, and I am very pleased on behalf of the court, my colleagues, to be in Guernsey County and to be participating in our 61st off-site court. I want to, for the record, as they say, thank Judge Elwood for his support and his hospitality and the preparation that has been given to our visit both by the court and Judge Elwood's staff, as well as the local bar association. Everybody that we have come in contact with has been absolutely wonderful, and I commend the teachers from all of the schools that will be present for their efforts as well. Now, we will start with case 10-465, the State of Ohio versus Larry Adkins. For the appellant, Mr. Sesner.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Justice and fellow justices, this case is a criminal case and it involves the felony DUI statute, the driving under suspension of alcohol, and the enhancement of the misdemeanor DUI, or OVI as we now call it, to a felony. Mr. Adkins was convicted under the felony provision, the felony enhancement provision of the OVI. And in order to do that, part of the evidence was that he was previously convicted of 5 prior offenses within 20 years, which is the 20-year look back. Under that felony provision, the language is that an offender within 20 years of the offense previously has been convicted or pleaded guilty to 5 or more violations of that nature, and it goes on to say that thereby enhances it from a misdemeanor to a felony. Now, one of the statutes and the primary statute in question is RC 2901.08. That was enacted January 1st, 1996. That's when it became effective. And what happened was that the 5 prior convictions that were needed up to this time had to be actual convictions for criminal offenses. Under 2901.08, it then became possible to count a juvenile adjudication as a conviction. In this case, keeping in mind that the statute came into effect in 1996, one of the 5 prior convictions that Mr. Adkins was charged with as a necessary element of the offense that made up the offense was a finding that he was a juvenile traffic offender, and that took place in 1987, in November of 1987. There is a difference between a criminal conviction and a finding that a person is adjudicated a juvenile traffic offender. A18 of the merit brief in the appendix, I have a copy which has been throughout the record of the Mr. Adkins' determination that he was a juvenile traffic offender, and that statement, that judgment entry, says that the court adjudicates Gary Adkins to be a juvenile traffic offender as a result of a violation of alcohol concentration. I think this illustrates the difference between a criminal charge and an adjudication in the juvenile court.
There's no question of the fact that in the juvenile adjudication that he was under the influence of alcohol. That was the purpose or nature of the adjudication,
well,
right?
I would draw the court's attention, and I'll just quote briefly from the Henry Anderson case. First of all, that particular case says this, that thus from their inception, juvenile courts existed as civil, not criminal courts. The basic therapeutic mission of the courts continues to this day. We hold that a juvenile court proceeding is a civil action. Now, if you look at the judgment entry, it doesn't say that he was guilty of driving under the influence, because a juvenile can be adjudicated a juvenile delinquent or traffic offender if he has any alcohol in his system. So there is a difference. And the court recognized in Anderson that there is a great difference between the adjudication in juvenile court and a conviction in criminal court. Now,
but counsel, doesn't the statute 290108 allows for the counting of the juvenile proceeding?
Your Honor, according to its language, it does, but it does not expressly provide that it is retroactive.
Well, that probably is the more troubling of the issues, not whether or not the statute can count the adjudication of juvenile alcohol offenses in regards to traffic violations in this matter. What's your best argument for the retroactivity issue?
Well, Your Honor, the retroactivity only applies if the statute is made expressly retroactive.
But is it an enhanced penalty for the actual offense of driving as a juvenile under the influence of alcohol? There's no additional penalty for that juvenile infraction, is there?
Well, the problem is that, first of all, this is, if it's applied retrospectively, if it affects juvenile adjudications prior to 1996, then it is being applied retrospectively. And the problem is that at the time, in 1987, when Mr. Atkins was in juvenile court as a child, there was no legal effect that could affect him in the future.
Could that affect the adjudication in the juvenile court, in your view?
Pardon?
Could that affect the adjudication of him as a delinquent in the juvenile court, in your view?
Well, if you look back, let's say in a criminal case.
Well, he had no idea that there would be collateral consequences in 1987, did he?
That is correct.
And however, counsel, we're talking about five alcohol-related convictions, so certainly after 1996, Mr. Atkins is on notice. It's not as if the court just looked back at the 87 conviction and applied a sentence enhancement. He had four additional alcohol-related offenses, so he certainly would be on notice of the new law.
Mr. Atkins was on notice of the law under which he was charged. That law defined the offense as being at least five prior convictions of an adult charge. In other words, we're talking about convictions. We're not talking about juvenile adjudications. Mr. Atkins, at the time that he was a juvenile, was not convicted in any sense of a criminal offense, nor does the judgment entry describe a criminal offense equivalent to OVI. It simply says because of alcohol concentration, and that simply reflects the fact that juvenile courts are not bound by the same standards when they adjudicate, because it is therapeutic in nature. They're not bound by the same standards.
But counsel, why wouldn't that your argument about retroactive application also apply to his adult convictions? Why couldn't the same argument be made saying that when I committed driving under the influence violations, well, if the first one was a juvenile, 2, 3, and 4, even though I was an adult, then they changed the statute, and now those have a cumulative effect when it comes to my fifth or more violation, or sixth or more violation. Why wouldn't the same argument about the unfairness of counting those prior DUI or OVI offenses be equally as valid?
The reason they wouldn't be is because he is charged under the OVI criminal statute. He is on notice that five prior convictions can be counted. Convictions, it says, where he has previously been convicted or found guilty.
So you're saying that's the 1996 statute?
No, I'm saying that is the OVI statute. The OVI statute still says today, an offender who within 20 years of the offense previously has been convicted or pleaded guilty. It does not say anything about counting a civil finding that he was a juvenile violation based on a concentration of alcohol, which doesn't even describe a prior OVI.
You're confusing two arguments in my mind. You're saying that the juvenile adjudication is a civil proceeding and it's been transposed into a criminal proceeding. Is that your argument?
No, my argument is, first of all, if I can go back, he is charged as an adult.
I understand.
I understand that the juvenile case is over. He's put on notice by the criminal statute under which he was charged and convicted. Now we have to look, if you look at Section C of 2901.04, it says that any provision of the revised code that refers to a previous conviction or a plea of guilty, again, it says the same thing. It's consistent with the statute under which he was convicted. Any provision of the Ohio Revised Code that refers to a previous conviction or plea of guilty in violation of the section. And then it goes on to refer to previous conviction of or a plea of guilty to a substantially equivalent offense. But it has to be a plea of guilty. That's what the statute says. The problem is that in State versus Glover, the court, the majority opinion never dealt with that. They never dealt with the effect of their decision, the effect that it would have on these other statutes that are still law.
So are you saying, counsel, that 2901.08 violates that principle? Because it seems very clear that statute says that we're going to take the juvenile adjudication and call it a criminal conviction for purposes of this DUI statute.
My case involves retroactive application, and I think the retroactive law covers that, but you are absolutely right. They have, when the statute of 1996 says that now we're going to count juvenile adjudications, which are civil matters, as this court said in Ray Anderson, we're going to count that as a criminal conviction, but we're not going to change the requirement that the conviction be based upon a prior criminal charge. And it's inconsistent. And the problem with the inconsistency is, if you look at 2901.04, you can't apply it anymore because it, again, is consistent with the same requirement that it be a prior criminal conviction.
But if you read the statutes together, they give you the entire picture of what is the what constitutes five prior convictions. And the 1996 statute says, for our purposes, a juvenile adjudication is equivalent and will be one of the five.
And that's in conflict with the very statute under which he was convicted, because that's the statute that gives him notice. It also creates a problem with 2901.04.
You're talking about notice back when he was in juvenile court, not notice at the time he committed this last offense for which he is, the penalty is enhanced.
Your Honor, it goes beyond notice because these statutes, which are still in effect, and remember that State versus Glover never dealt with these statutes, never answered the question, well, how does this affect these other statutes? Well, the problem is, you're right, 2901.08 is inconsistent and creates confusion on the interpretation of 2901.04, on the applicable enhancement provision. It creates confusion where there is no ambiguity. There is no ambiguity in it, but now if you start reading 2901.08, it's ambiguous because it may or may not apply, and the legislature can go on and make other qualifications outside the criminal statute itself.
Let me ask you hypothetically. The statute 2901.08 says in part that the adjudication as a delinquent child or as a juvenile traffic offender is a conviction for a violation of law for purposes of determining the offense with which the person should be charged.
But it's not a conviction, Your Honor.
Well, going forward, if this would happen in the future, could that be applied in your view or not?
I think there is a problem with that statute, whether it's applied retrospectively or prospectively.
And what is it that you can capsulize as your statement of what the problem is? Is it just because it's inconsistent in your view with 2901.04, or is there another problem?
Because, number one, we still adhere to N. Ray Anderson, a juvenile adjudication is not a conviction. You cannot.
Well, it's a civil proceeding and it's an adjudication as delinquent. Is that your point?
Yes.
So you're saying, in the first instance, it's a civil proceeding and there was a delinquent adjudication and that's not a criminal conviction.
That's right. And you can't make it a criminal conviction for certain purposes unless you change the statute.
That's different from your retroactive argument.
Yes, there is more than one argument. My retroactive argument is the strongest position Mr. Atkins
is in. So you're basically disagreeing with the policy that has been implemented by the legislature to include these juvenile adjudications when it comes to this very limited activity by a juvenile, which is driving with an alcohol concentration. You're disagreeing with that policy, and you say the statute cannot implement a policy such as that.
No, I'm not disagreeing with the policy. What I'm saying is that it is inconsistent with statutory law. It goes beyond policy.
Statutes are enacting the policy, and what the legislature here wants to do is enhance your penalties and your status for multiple alcohol driving violations. And in order to do that, they will look at your history, and the history that they are now including is your juvenile history, and you're saying, and that's their policy decision, and you're saying that that is inappropriate.
No, it's not a question of policy. It's not a question of inappropriate. The courts in an adult case could always consider on the PSIs. They will get a report of the juvenile record. They can take that into consideration. The problem is that they are inconsistent. This statute, as applied retroactively to my client, is inconsistent with 1.48 because it cannot be retroactively implied. You cannot change the nature of a juvenile adjudication by saying for this purpose it's civil, for that purpose it's criminal.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Cessner.
I wanted to reserve a minute or two.
I know, but.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Walter.
Madam Chief Justice, may it please the court. My name is Brian Walter. I'm an assistant county prosecutor with Delaware County, Ohio. I'm here on behalf of the Delaware County prosecuting attorney, Ms. Carol Hamilton O'Brien, representing the state of Ohio, the appellee in this matter. The state looks at the issues raised by the appellant as two main issues here. One is the retroactivity or not of 2901.08. And the second one then is, this court has alluded to, a policy argument on whether or not a juvenile adjudication can be considered a conviction for purposes of enhancement.
Mr. Walter, before you get to your two main arguments, I just want to clarify. Counsel was talking about 2901.04, and I believe that section C that he's talking about is being inconsistent with the other statute. Looking at the Court of Appeals opinion, it doesn't appear that they in any way looked at that particular statute. Are you aware if that issue was raised at the Court of Appeals level?
That issue being?
The issue of the conflict between the two statutes, 2901.04C and 2901.08.
I don't believe it was raised in that issue. The opinion in the Fifth District is very brief in its mention of these issues. I think the original appellate argument contained only one paragraph on this retroactive issue.
It didn't mention the conflict between the statutes at all?
No.
Okay.
Is the problem we have, 08A says that the juvenile adjudication shall be considered as a conviction, when our case law clearly says, and the history of the courts is that these are not convictions in juvenile court. If they had used that it just shall be counted instead of calling it a conviction, would that have cured it? Do we have a language problem that they're using language that is inconsistent with case law and case history?
Your Honor, I don't believe so. I believe reading the statute, the adjudication is to be used only in that limited purpose for enhancement purposes, that it's not treated like a conviction in any other manner other than for enhancement purposes.
But then you have the comparison of an adult conviction, which has very definite limits on, you know, how much you're drinking, you know, what your alcohol level is, what your level of offense is. In your juvenile, it's not an equivalent. You could have just one sip of beer and be convicted, so you don't have an equivalency in terms of even the underlying facts.
Yes. I still think, you know, the limited purpose, though, for what it's saying, I don't believe it's a conviction in terms of any other effects that you will have with that conviction later on. It is simply being used in that limited purpose for considering that for enhancement purposes. The state would contend, first off, that the definition of what a retroactive law needs to be first looked at. The state, in its brief, has stated that it does not meet the definition of what is a prohibited ex post facto or retroactive law. It does not make any previous innocent act criminal. It doesn't increase a punishment for a crime after its commission. It doesn't deprive the accused of a defense that would have been available at the time of the commission, and it doesn't impose any new duties or obligations. The state contends that those duties and obligations are imposed on the second act, the second, third, or in this case, seventh criminal action that the defendant occurred, that those obligations don't attach to the juvenile conviction. The state would bring up the point, if that juvenile defendant never again would drink and drive, get an OVI, then none of those obligations would attach. It is strictly the triggering mechanism of that additional criminal conduct bringing along these additional obligations and duties. Now, this is being, 2901.08 is being applied prospectively to regulate future behavior at its core. The penalties attached to the second act, as the cases have stated. The state would then transition its argument into saying a analogous point to consider here is how this court, how courts in Ohio have treated repeat offender or recidivism statutes. As Blackburn v. State, Ex parte Allen, habitual criminal statutes have similar situations such as this. An offense is committed. In the case of Blackburn v. State, it was a possible lifetime imprisonment for a third felony conviction from 1893. The first felony was committed. A law then was enacted afterwards that says if you have three felony convictions, you could face up to life imprisonment. Ultimately, two other convictions were brought along, and there was a retroactive argument, and the court denied that. The court, in that ruling, has stated that the person is on notice. As a repeat offender, that person is put in a class that is not entitled to as much the constitutional guarantee that the prohibition against retroactive or ex post facto laws are entitled to protect, that person goes in with eyes wide open when they commit.
Mr. Walter, on that point, were there any other statutes that would cover or would include juvenile adjudications for purpose of repeat offender activity?
I believe any crime that could be enhanced, carrying concealed weapon, domestic violence, OVIs, anything like that, the juvenile adjudication could be used for enhancement purposes.
Because of 2901.08?
Yes, of the language.
So
of
it's not just the DUI. You're talking about the juvenile adjudication being used for purposes of sentencing on any repeat offender.
Sentencing or the charge to be levied against them.
All right.
Except
Mr. Miller, back to Justice Stratton's question. The problem with the journal entry, as submitted in appellant's brief at A18, is that it doesn't identify a specific offense. So typically, forget whether it's civil or criminal, the journal entry would typically say that the court finds the juvenile to be a delinquent minor as a result of committing X. In this journal entry, it simply says, as a result of a violation of alcohol consumption, fleeing an officer, and failure to maintain assured clear distance. So we don't really even know if this is an OVI charge here as the journal entry that's been submitted. How do we use that, even assuming that 2901.08 is a lawful statute, how do we use this journal entry to determine that, in fact, it was a juvenile OVI offense?
Well, it is listed as one. It comes in any leads printout, anything like that, that shows that it is.
It may be listed when it comes to leads, but there's nothing in the journal entry identifying a statute, identifying that he was, it just says violation of alcohol assumption. Are we to assume because of the fleeing an officer that he was in the car, he could have been a passenger? Because alcohol consumption is illegal for juveniles. So we have no way from this journal entry to determine if he was the driver of the vehicle.
Wouldn't the assured clear distance take care of that confusion?
Well, I guess that's a good point. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Let me ask you a different,
yes,
or maybe a similar question, if I could, Mr. Walter. 4511.19 says in part that the violation of Division A or B or other equivalent offense who within 20 years has previously been convicted or pleaded guilty to five or more violations of that nature. And it's that phrase of that nature that's causing me difficulty.
In terms of?
What was the nature of the juvenile adjudication?
The nature in this case was a OVI. It wasn't an OVUAC. It wasn't underage consumption, not rising to. It was an OVI. It was adjudicated juvenile traffic offender, which would put that into the language of 2901.08A.
How do you get OVI out of just alcohol concentration?
The facts of this case, it was a refusal. It was charged the equivalent of a juvenile OVI charge, and it was adjudicated as such in the facts of this case.
Is that submitted as an exhibit somewhere?
I do not believe so.
The proposition of law that this court accepted and the only issue that we're really deciding today is whether or not 2901.08, which will allow the counting of a juvenile adjudication in the number of prior cases, is retroactive. And what is the best argument that you have that it is not retroactive?
The state would go back to what is the definition of a retroactive law. That being, does it make a previous innocent act criminal? Clearly, an OVI, never an innocent act. Does it increase the punishment for a crime after its commission? That does not happen here. Nothing is being changed with the juvenile penalties associated with that at the time in 1987. No additional fines, suspensions, incarceration, anything like that. Nothing is being applied to that juvenile adjudication. It's the subsequent acts that are being punished.
The law that allows the counting of a prior juvenile adjudication was enacted before the defendant committed his act in this case. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. The state would rely on a comparison to how recidivism statutes have been long upheld valid by this court and other courts in Ohio, the habitual criminal statutes, and Blackburn v. State, Ex parte Allen, the Sixth Circuit of the U.S., and U.S. v. Yokohama, these have been long upheld valid. You know, an offense happens, a statute then comes into place that says there will be a repeat offense, that repeat offenders will be treated as such because they are on notice, and then an argument is brought up about retroactive. The cases that I've seen, they all involve the fact that that person goes into those subsequent acts, those subsequent criminal acts, with their eyes wide open, that they know or bound to know that they became a member of a class whom severe measures have been deemed necessary. In this case, you have two two OVIs that occurred after enactment of this law, one in March of 1996. That's important. That happened mere months after this was enacted. Clearly an inference of notice could be there, notice for the defendant. And then there's also one in August of 2002, along with the current 2007 indictment. All three of those times when the defendant got behind the wheel and chose to drink and drive, he is on notice that he is part of this class where severe measures will be deemed for repeat offenders.
I understand your argument that the disability relates to the latest offense because it's been enhanced.
Correct, Your Honor.
But the Constitution says that the General Assembly shall pass no retroactive law, and in State v. Wall, we said a statute runs afoul of this constitutional provision if it takes away or impairs vested rights acquired under existing laws, or creates a new obligation or a new duty, or attaches a new disability in respect to transactions already passed. I guess the question that you have to think about is whether or not there is a disability in respect to the past transaction. Why couldn't Mr. Atkins argue that there is a new disability as a result of what happened in the past? Because it wasn't a criminal conviction at the time it occurred, but now it is.
Well, the state would state that he is on notice by the time he commits that offense. But
he's not on notice at the time that it happened.
It's, correct.
In other words, in the language of the case law, wouldn't it be a new disability in respect to a past transaction? Well, I guess that's my question.
Yeah. Your Honor, as I've read this, a substantive retroactive law is unconstitutional. Substantive meaning it impairs vested right, new duty, obligation, as such. The state's contention here is it does not impose any new duty and obligation as that states on past conduct. That obligation and duty is not on the past conduct. As I stated, if that juvenile defendant, when he reaches adulthood, does not commit another criminal act, zero liability, zero burden attaches to that juvenile offense. There are no new obligations, no new duties. That ties back into the recidivism statute that says it's the third act, fourth act that are being punished. And when that individual does, they do it with eyes wide open. They do it with the fact that they are now part of a class, a repeat offender class, for which these protections don't apply.
So if according to my understanding of that prohibition in the Constitution, if there was a law passed saying that if you had been adjudicated as a juvenile offender for driving with an alcohol blood content the same as Mr. Atkins had, and you are now required to register in some way as a result of that past experience or that past conviction, that would be the imposition of a new disability attached to a prior activity or adjudication. But we're prospective in this.
Absolutely, Your Honor. The classification would happen regardless if the defendant committed another criminal act.
Correct.
It would be something that does reach back, that does change something that was not at place at the time of the 1987 juvenile adjudication. The important point to remember here is that a criminal act has to occur. A future criminal act has to occur for any duty or obligation to attach, and the case law has been clear that recidivism statute, repeat violent offender statutes, those are valid. Those are valid because the second act, the third act are being punished. That is where those attachments are coming on, those are where the liabilities are coming on, and that the first act is not being increased penalty-wise. No new suspensions, no new fines, no new potential incarcerations. Anything else? I see my time's getting close.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Cessner, you went over by 2 minutes and 10 seconds. I'll give you 30 seconds to sum up.
Your Honor, I would just indicate at this point, I'm sure the court has reviewed the briefs, and I think every question, every statement that has been raised has been responded to. And in particular, if you look at the reply brief, or the answer brief of the state. In my reply brief, I took each case and showed where it is distinguished. It doesn't apply. The only case that applies here is State versus Glover. And the real question is, was the majority right when they didn't consider all of the things we've discussed today, or was Judge Hoffman right at that point.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We will take the matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decision. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.